Tasher Emily. Emily 在一起 podcast
啊
啊，你男朋友老大，
你
他是老大。
你好，
你好，
你好吗？
好。
The best, the worst, the first.
2015, that the lithium market was showing signs of movement.A lot of people were talking about EVs and the potential of EVs. This was in early 2015.
As many members of the lithium community know, I did a crowdfund for a short film that I wrote and directed.
And even a little bit about our culture too. Like, I feel that's an important element to be sharing with people outside the company. And yes, that is a deliberate strategy.
You're listening to the Global Lithium Podcast.
Hey, Joe.
Good afternoon, Emily.
Are you ready for another episode of the Global Lithium Podcast?
I am absolutely ready for the first anniversary, 25th episode, special edition, first bilingual Global Lithium Podcast.
I, Joe, am also ready. So I am Emily Hirsch. I am one half of the Global Lithium Podcasting team. I'm joined here back in Buenos Aires, where it all began, by one Mr. Joe Lowry.
And today, we are welcoming two of my favorite lithium people in the universe, Mr. Li Langbin, the chairman of Ganfeng, and my buddy Wang Xiaoshen, who is the vice chairman of Ganfeng. So they have honored us after 15 minutes ago meeting with the president of Argentina.
Yeah, guys, welcome. I hope that this is keeping with the ritzy glamour that goes with meeting a head of state. Welcome to the Global Lithium Podcast.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Xian Sen, Wan Ying, Wan Ying.
How do you say Wan Ying?
Welcome.
Wan Ying, how do you say to the Global Lithium Podcast?
Global Lithium Podcast.
Wan Ying Global Lithium Podcast.
Okay. All right, so let's get started.
Right, let's do this. So we have the heads of Ganfeng Lithium, which is definitely and easily the fastest growing lithium company in the world. The lithium company that has gone from being, I think, 15 years ago, a name that was only probably known in China or in the most knowledgeable lithium circles to what is and should be a household name in the industry today. Welcome. So let's have a chat, Mr. Wang Xiaoshen, if I can. Welcome to
you can call me Xiaoshen.
Thank you, Xiaoshen. So welcome to the Global Lithium Podcast. Can you please just sort of let our audience know a little bit about Ganfeng and sort of where you and where Ganfeng came from, starting from, I guess, where the story should begin?
Well, let's do two things, because these are two of the most interesting histories in the lithium world. And Mr. Li started Ganfeng, but Xiaoshen started with the original lithium company in China, which was Xinjiang, non-ferrous. And so if we could just kind of hear a little bit about your history, and then we'll ask you can translate for Mr. Li, like the same question of how he came to start Ganfeng, and we'll go from there.
Xiaoshen, where would you begin the story?
I think maybe we can do timeline, through the timeline.
Yeah, great.
Timeline.
Yeah, great
through
idea.
The timeline.
Set okay. The stage.
So you grew up in Xinjiang province.
Yeah, I grew up in the Xinjiang province. I born in Xinjiang, Urumqi. And when my university was in Beijing, after university it was 1990, I joined the lithium industries by coincidence. I had no idea about the lithium before I joined the lithium company, because that time it's a state-owned company, Xinjiang lithium plant. That was my first job, that's in 1990. But actually, Mr. Li joined the lithium industries 2 years earlier, it's in 1988. But he works with another state-owned lithium company in Jiangxi province.
Okay.
So this is where we began in the, with the lithium.
So as I recall, Mr. Li, when he graduated from college, he was assigned to work in a lithium company. Is that correct, or did I?
Actually, maybe you can ask Mr. Li to talk a little bit about this.
Yes, exactly.
Translate to your question.
这个问题是你当时大学毕业以后是被分配到你的工厂，还是你有这个选择自己？也有选择。首先是学校可以分配，分配了当时新钢和江西锂厂两个单位由我选。我觉得我到江西锂厂来了，前途会大一点。为什么呢？因为它的人少，是有800人，我从800人里面杀出来比较容易。 新钢有50,000人，我要杀出来可能不容易，所以后来就选择江西锂厂，是有一定的选择的啊。
At that time, Mr. Li has two choices. One choice is to be sent to the big state-owned steel mills, which is have 50,000 employees. Another choice is the Jiangxi lithium plant, which has 800 people. He think it would be easier for him to be successful in the 800 people's company other than 50,000 people's.
That's some sound reasoning. That's
你的想法非常好的，我觉得。
事实证明还是不错的想法。
And so it's 1988, he starts out, and then you enter the industry in the 90s. How did your stories intersect?
That's a very interesting history. My jobs, most of the times I'm in the commercial side. I did several years for sales of product, lithium products, and also do the lithium marketing sales globally for the lithium plant until 2002, actually. At that time, after 1998, we start to distribute SQM's lithium carbonate. And when Mr. Li started Ganfeng Lithium, he needed the lithium carbonate as a feedstock to produce the chloride that produced metal. So he became my customer, so that we how to get to know each other.
Oh, okay.
But that's a great part of the history too. So as I recall, when SQM was first starting, and I was with FMC, we did the toll for carbonate, but you did the first big contract, I think maybe 3,000 tons or something like that.
At that time, yeah, it's 3,000, at minimum 3,000 tons a year. But that was more than, I think, more than 15% of their total production.
Yeah, and this was in
1998.
Yes,
starting from 1998.
Yeah, so now we've got kind of multiple parties involved. Mr. Li is in Jiangxi. He's now your customer. And gee, all this time I thought I told, you know, I didn't know he knew you before I talked to him about you in 2002. So
actually, we knew after, I think, 2001, I think, something like that, 2001.
So at that time, when Mr. Li, you know, this is a question to Mr. Li, and you know my Chinese is terrible, so I'll let you ask it for me. When he was at the Jiangxi Lithium Company and he looked at, and he was sourcing from you, and I met him because he needed more sourcing. But at the time, in say 19, when you did, he did the first deal with you, what size was Jiangxi Lithium's production
You mean the Ganfeng?
这个问题是，就是我第一次把碳酸锂卖给你的时候，你当时买了多少吨数量？你还记得吧？时间这么长，可能确切的数字不记得。大概应该是至少是二十吨。二十吨，20 tons.
Okay, so now from the beginnings almost 20 years ago, 20 tons. Now Ganfeng's capacity is 60,000 at the end of the year,
approximately. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, by the end of this year. Yeah.
And I have a question for Mr. Li. Does Mr. Li remember when he met Joe Lowry?
Emily, 有个问题是，你还记得你怎么这个第一次见到这个 Joe Lowry 的？
在北京啊。
在北京。我记得那天是中国的元宵节，我赶过去见他。啊，我不晓得他记不记得那天是中国的元宵节。
Do you remember that was the Chinese Yuanxiao Festival?
Yeah.
He came to Beijing to meet you.
Yeah, I remember. It was a very interesting meeting. So from that beginning, and then the next time I met Mr. Li was in Jiangxi, and you picked me up at the airport, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, there's kind of a connection between the three guys that goes back almost 20 years.
Many moons. And so let's jump ahead before we jump back in time again. Let's talk about Argentina. How long has Ganfeng been involved in projects in Argentina, in the country?
Actually, we start to invest in the Argentina project indirectly since 2011.
Okay, so yeah. 7 years ago. And yeah. That's gone, I think, a lot of, you know, you've gone from, I guess, an indirect investment to a very, you know, you just came from meeting the president. And how was that meeting?
That's a great meeting.
Yeah?
Yeah, very excellent. And so we were very impressive of the President Macri.
That's good.
So for context, Ganfeng's come to Argentina this week. I had the pleasure of being with Mr. Li and Mr. Wang in Salta province and then Jujuy province, the two of the projects they're involved with. Yesterday in Jujuy, we met with the Secretary of Mining, the governor. We had a celebration for Ganfeng's project at Cauchari. And then last night, we flew back to Buenos Aires. And today, these guys meet the president of Argentina. The president didn't necessarily want to meet me, but of course, he wanted to meet Ganfeng. This is kind of the growth story between 1998. They were buying, you know, Mr. Li was sourcing 20,000 tons. And now they've gone from that humble beginning to now being one of the top lithium companies in the world. And we'll get into a little bit about your belief of the future and where you're going. But now their capacity, it's 60,000 tons. Before we count their projects in Argentina.
So looking at, I guess, the growth of Ganfeng, when did Ganfeng sort of break the top five, top six lithium producers? When in the timeline did Ganfeng emerge as one of the names that if you're going to talk about lithium, you have to talk about Ganfeng?
I think it's, if you look at Ganfeng's history, before 2010, we were mainly focused on the downstreams, lithium mm-hmm. products, including lithium metal, organic lithium, and also some lithium specialties. After 2010, when we listed in Shenzhen Stock Exchange in China, and we started to invest in the upstreams, we get involved in the battery grade lithium carbonate, lithium hydroxide, several years later, hydroxide. So we think we probably becoming top, let's say, four or five after our hydroxide production into production since 2013, 2014.
Let's talk a bit about Mr. Li's kind of philosophy of how Ganfeng developed, because I always thought it was a brilliant strategy that he went where everybody else didn't go. He went to the downstream, where even the big three were kind of weak. You know, Albemarle never produced metal, FMC didn't produce enough metal for their own needs, and Ganfeng grew their downstream business. Could you just ask Mr. Li to tell us a little bit about how he decided how to approach the business going downstream first?
And Joe 的问题就是说，你当时选择的时候，为什么会选择先从你的下游开始？
因为这个锂的下游是单元操作，比较投资比较少，我们那个时候没钱嘛，白手起家，所以呢只能选择投资少见效快的项目开始做。锂的下游产品呢，大部分呢就是一个阶段的操作，比如像氟化锂，它这个投资很少，它的利润还是比较高的，所以呢完了比较适合创业，容易起步。
Because when Mr. Lee started his own career, own businesses, he didn't have the money. So the money would be the very important factor to consider what to start with. And downstream products, because of the smaller volume, is CapEx is much smaller. So this is the easier way to start with.
I have a, just as a question on when did Mr. Lee and both of you as Ganfeng realize that the lithium business was going to grow so fast? When was that moment when you were like, wow, this is not going to tick up a couple percent a year. This is going to be a ski slope or a massive...
hockey stick or a big curve.
Maybe I'll translate first.
Yeah. Translate so first and have faster. A chat. It's look, it's calm. We all
Our listeners want to hear it. We have some Chinese fans, so this is going to be make it easy for the Chinese listeners. They can listen in their own language, not English.
Yeah.
我觉得从什么时候应该是在上市以后，上市以后呢，我们呢觉得开始要布局上游，然后呢，我们对这个上游的布局呢，我们觉得是一个是很关键的，也是一个很重要的一个决策。这个影响到赣锋下一步的发展，尤其是后来电子级碳酸锂进入了这个行业以后。 而且呢，这个行业又开始价格猛涨，而且销量猛增的情况下，给赣锋带来很多的发展机会。所以的话呢，我是觉得应该是在我们上市以后，我们第一个我们有资本，那如果没有资本，你也等于零。我们上市以后融了钱，然后有钱呢，我们才能去投这个生产线。同时呢，我们又有一个融资平台，又可以去有更多的想法，我们可以通过这个融资平台来做。
Actually, if it, we have to look at this as two angles. One is when the market is coming. Another is when we are able to do it in the bigger scale. Ms. Lee think after we've been listed in the stock exchange, we have the platform to get finance. So we are able to get money to support our expansion plan. So this is the basic conditions we have achieved. Then the market starting, we believe that especially after the smartphone started and it generated lots of demands, very fast growth for the lithium carbonate at that time because smartphone, normally the battery use lithium cobaltite, which is used lithium carbonate.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that's the beginning of the fast growth of the lithium demands. And it's from 2010. We think the EV starting actually from 2013, 2014, by that time still very small volumes for the EVs, for instance, the EV market. After 14, 15, the EV demand starting to grow much quicker.
Let me ask you, in your answer and Mr. Lee's answer, because you were partners by this time. But if you go back, and I don't remember if when we met in Shanghai and Mr. Lee took his calculator and typed in 3,200 and put it up to my eyeballs and said, this has got to be the new chloride price or I'm going to bring brine in from SQM. And at the time you were paying me $6,000 a ton and I said, I love you guys, but I can sell it to somebody else. And I didn't realize what a smart move that was at the time because like many people, I thought, who's going to bring that solution across the Pacific? Who can do this? And Mr. Lee did it. And I'd just like to get his thinking on how that decision, but then how did he decide in the future there was going to become a point where he was going to need his own resources. But at this time, he could still leverage SQM's excess, underflow, Buley brines, and other raw materials. So if he could just kind of talk about how he thought about when to make that move, when to break my heart by telling me my price needed to go down by 45%, and how to go forward.
Okay, let me translate your question first. 这个问题是当时应该是零五年零四零六年零七年的时候，当时你跟他讲， 氯化锂价格应该降到3200，要不然的话我们就用智利的 SQM 的卤水来做氯化锂。当时它的价格还在卖5000-6000，他说没办法，你不要这个价格，别人有很多人抢着要。就是你当时是怎么想，对未来的这个资源这块是怎么考虑的？
我们因为赣锋呢，创业的阶段呢是没有资源的，所以呢时时刻刻在关注这个资源的一个变化。尤其是埃斯科姆卖卤水给我们以后，当然那个时候是信息不对称，他们不是不清楚，他们肯定认为我们是套他的话的，是吧？就是只是作为一个筹码来跟他谈的。但呢那个时候呢，我们确确实实在想办法来解决这个问题。那因为做企业是要讲究成本的，成本越低，那企业的竞争力就越强。那我们从埃斯科姆引进这个卤水来生产氯化锂以后，那确确实实降低了成本25%。那就我们能占25%，别人就要亏，就差不多占不到一分钱。所以呢，在靠这个呢，我们就跻身了全球最大的金属锂生产商。
At that time, you know that when Mr. Lee talked with you about the using brine to produce chloride, at that time we already developed the process. And
he didn't tell me.
It's not only
那个时候我不知道你的想法。
It's not. He said it was not just for bargaining. Using that for bargaining actually was real because we want to reduce our cost.
Yeah.
By producing from more upstream resources to our products. So actually, we have successfully reduced by cost, but more than 25% by using the brine from Chile.
Well, that time, I believed Mr. Lee's thinking that he could do it. What I thought would be the limiting factor was the logistics, just the number of toads, and I was wrong, and he was right. That's why he's sitting where he is, and I'm sitting where I am.
当时就是不相信我们这个物流上能够解决这个问题，把卤水从智利运到中国来，没有想到这个问题。对，所以他当时他是错了，所以他现在坐在那里，现在坐在这里，
恭喜恭喜。
但是呢，我是觉得从生意伙伴上来讲呢，就是一个很好的一个合作伙伴，帮我们提高了很多，包括我们怎么来做年度计划呀，怎么都是从他身上学到的。对我们来讲也是我们应该感恩这个角了，对。
Actually, we as a Ganfeng, I think we should appreciate Joe Lowry's works in the past a lot. We also learned a lot from Joe. It's also how to do the business plan at that time when Ganfeng was still young.
李先生，谢谢你，谢谢，真的。The chloride project worked. So you grew to almost 20,000 tons of LCE without having your own resource. So at what point, I think you became in the top five before Mount Marion, before your own resource. So at what point in time did Mr. Lee decide that, okay, Ganfeng, the vision changed many times. I remember I have your first PowerPoint you gave me, 2003?
2004,
2005. Yeah, 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 yeah. And I still have it. I actually have it on a little drive here. And I look at it quite often because it amazes me how many times the vision changed. You know, strong Chinese producer, strong regional producer, and now, you know, now
global powerhouse.
Global powerhouse. So just... Was the thinking way back in 2005 or 2006 that I have to, at some point, secure resources, I have to get the financing? So can you just talk about how that evolved?
Joe 的问题是我们过去的，我们的目标在不断的在调整。最早的时候，他记得我最早给他给看的赣锋的这个目标，我们是作为中国的锂的行业的领导者，当时是我们的目标。后来就成了地区性的领导者，现在我们已经成为全球的一个重要的锂的生产商。那我们这个策略的变化是在一个什么样的过程中？他就想了解一下，怎么在什么样情况下调整我们的这样的策略。
我觉得纵观赣锋这个十几年的发展来讲，其实最重要的一个原则呢是顺应自然发展的原则， 我觉得这个也就相当于很多人问这个松下，这个你觉得企业能发展到这么大是怎么创造成这么大。其实当时松下就讲一个顺应自然发展的原则，我觉得这个呢对于干部来讲也是这样的。其实我们在发展的过程中，这几年我们的目标无论是什么时候设定的目标都是一步一步的，并不没有一个说我哪一年我一定要搞到，其实现在我们要讲一个20万吨那还是比较容易实现的一个目标，并没有讲一些空虚无缥缈的目标。所以的话呢，我觉得我们这些都是能落地的一个目标，所以的话呢在一步一步通过这个努力能实现的。所以的话呢，我是觉得哈，我们这个目标还是基于这个，所以能逐渐能实现这个目标，然后呢不断的做一些调整。因为我们很快就超越了像 FMC 啊，甚至未来我们还会超越 SKM， 甚至还会超过雅宝。那么就是在这个不断的努力过程中，你超越了你肯定目标要做些调整啊，所以的话呢我都觉得是这样一个逐步的完成实践一个完成的过程啊。
Yeah, I think there's one principle unchanged, which is step by step. So in every steps, we set up this strategy or target, which is is achievable, not too high to achieve. So this is the reason why we're becoming today. But also when we becoming bigger, we have to adjust our strategy accordingly from time to time. So that's just to follow the nature.
Yeah, I just like to develop the story a little more as to how both of you thought about, I mean, at first you had to be friends, you were friends with everybody. I mean, unlike the rest of the industry who kind of, there were battles between rivals, Gangfin was close to SQM, you had a great relationship with Felipe Anguita, going back that far. You had a good relationship with Rockwood. He was running, he actually had Admiral SQM. And you were friends with me. You were both friends with me. You were friends with everybody. You did business with everybody. Just like some thoughts about that whole strategy of, and one more question, all the big three at one point tried to buy Gangfin. And I always believed that Mr. Lee considered Gangfin his baby and he would never sell his baby. But I just wonder if he was ever tempted to actually sell the company.
So let's take those two questions one at a time. As someone who's translated before, let's first talk about what it was or what the strategy was of talking to everyone. And then let's talk about the baby question.
Okay. 他们俩的问题是我们那个时候跟所有的公司关系都很好 SQM, FMC, 包括当时 Rockwood, 啊最早的 Chemical, Rockwood, 那这个关系我们是怎么来看的，因为很多人不像别的公司可能他们之间会关系会比较微妙，那我们跟各个公司都会有生意往来，这是第一个问题。第二个问题呢就是因为这三公司都跟赣锋谈过收购的事情，那Joe 的观点是认为赣锋是李总自己创业出来的，就像自己的孩子一样，是不是不会舍得去卖掉的。那时候为什么会愿意跟他们去谈这个并购的事情，大概是两个问题。
其实就像谈这个并购这个问题啊，其实呢跟 Joe 讲的是不错的，就是赣锋就是我们的小孩，我们慢慢把他哺育长大。但是我们去跟他谈的时候呢也是实实在在奔着这个目标去的。我记得最早我2004年到 SQM 去的时候，我当时我在飞机上就想，我说哎呀，我说这次一定要跟他能谈成一个什么样的好的结果。其实在我们的一个印象中还是很希望比如说在一个外国大公司的庇护下，我们可能会发展得更好，会发展得更快。但是呢你如果是你的下属子公司的话，你永远是无法像现在这样的。但是从刚我们开始创业的那个阶段，那还是希望能寻求一个安全的健康的快速发展，也是一个不错的选择。所以呢我们也是在谈的过程中呢会认真去谈， 我们2004年的时候，我们在飞机上，我讲我送25%的股份给艾斯科姆，那个审判给我讲，哎，你吃太多了吧，你给个15%就够了。既然我们提出来，他不要，再过3年想要钱来买我们的，这个有一点戏剧性的啊，就是从这个来讲。
That's very interesting story. 2004, when Mr. Lee first visited SQM, and on the flight, he think that he wants to do something seriously with SQM. So he wants to propose to give 25% of Ganfeng share to SQM for free to get the support of the raw material supply. And at that time, Shen Huaiguo, he was the representative of SQM yes. in China, said 25 maybe too much. Then he comes to us proposal for 15%. And SQM did due diligence. After the completed due diligence, they quit. They didn't want any share of the Ganfeng at that time, 2004. And 2006, SQM come back. And at that time, they want to make investment, pay the money for the share.
I remember.
Just two years later.
I didn't know about 2004 and the 25%, but I knew about 2006. So,
and every time when we discussed with FMC or Roku or SQM, at that time, because Ganfeng was a small company, we need to have a strong support for the raw material supply. So we were serious to discuss the cooperation with all big three companies at that time. So, but in the end, it didn't work out. Sometimes because the difference on the valuation, sometimes maybe in the end becoming the different directions, becoming different.
Does Mr. Lee feel, or do you feel that in the end he saw the future clearer than maybe the people who wanted to purchase the asset, and that he never could? His belief in himself and in the future was so strong that there was never going to be an offer that he could accept. He never could let somebody adopt his baby.
Yeah, you're right. It's as you said, it's real. It's like a baby. We created and we developed this baby, and so we will not be easy to give it up. So we want, if we think we have a chance to make it bigger, make it stronger, without being bought by somebody else, we would like to do that.
Okay, so let's fast forward a little bit. So now your baby's Yao Ming. And
Yao Ming is a Chinese basketball player.
Yeah,
in
he
the
played
NBA.
In the NBA. He's like the man in China.
Yao will shoot a three. Yao Ming with a three-pointer. His first three-pointer of the season. He's shooting 100%. One for one for the Great Wall.
So now your baby's Yao Ming, and you have to decide you need to have your own assets. And so now you've taken a path where, as far as I can see, and from traveling with you these last couple of days and from what you've done in Australia, you have probably the biggest diversity of raw material supply of any player. Even last week you just did a deal with Altura, which was a surprise to pretty much everybody. And just if you could just talk about how you've gotten from, you know, doing a brine deal with SQM to having your fingers in so many different pies, as we would say in English.
Okay. 说我们这个小孩现在已经长成了姚明这么大, 那这个时候我们怎么来决定, 尤其是我们在资源这个供应上, 我们现在应该是全球 最多元化的一个锂公司, 资源最多元化的, 我们有澳大利亚的项目, 有阿根廷的项目, 那我们是怎么来考虑的?
我觉得刚才他讲的那个问题我还没回答, 就是说我们跟三家关系都不错, 其实这个在企业发展的过程中呢, 肯定要依附一些大的企业, 就是靠强靠大嘛, 靠强靠大, 你就会自身就很好的发展, 所以的话呢, 当时 FMC 雅宝还不是那个叫
Roku
的，还有 SKM， 他们这几家的都比较大，就是哪一家帮助赣锋的话呢，那都对赣锋来讲是一个很好的一个发展。 所以的话呢，我们就在依附于这三家，然后把这个三家关系都处理得非常好，所以这个赣锋来很好的发展。那现在呢，赣锋呢已经变成比较强大了。你不可能再依附于在任何一家的这个基础上，比如像 SKM， 你给我一点资源，他也不会给你，对吧？所以现在是很难的。但是呢，我们呢现在呢是要考虑自己的怎么独立发展，能变成更加强大啊。但是呢，这个强大呢，就是要求讲的内涵的，而并不是说像 SKM， 不像天启买 SKM 的股份，我突然买了他20%几的股份，那我就变成大了。那个我觉得这个不是的，那是必须要通过一步一步的努力，通过一步一步的去做。然后呢，我们在产业化方面，我们的能力确实做得很强了，那我们才能当之无愧是比较大了。所以我们的做法呢，跟天启的做法肯定会不一样。我相信我们在未来的，赣锋很长的一段发展的过程中呢，我们都要通过这样的去做。才行，就是要一步一步的通过练内功，把自己的实力，这个无论是制造能力还是在矿山的拥有能力方面，我们都要做的在全球是具有很强话语权的一个公司啊。
First, back to your previous questions about how we get along with all three big companies, and at that time we think any one of these three big companies.Could give us support. So we have a good relationship with everyone. And also we think in the business world, especially myself, I think I don't want to call the competitors. I will always say the competitive partners. Actually, you are in the same industries, actually becoming partner of the industries. It's not, you are not only the competitors to other people, the producers, actually also the partners. So we still keep business relationship today. Even today, we have business relationship with SQM, FMC, of course. We're still doing some business with FMC and also Albemarle.
Yeah, I think that's what's differentiated you as...both of you, but in particular, since you represent Gangfin to the outside world more so than Mr. Lee does, just because of, you know, the language skills and your prior relationships, that, you know, I think you've leverage sounds like too planned, but I think what's happened is your natural relationships have leveraged into, you know,part of what's become Gangfin today, and now that everybody has to look at you a little bit as maybe Gangfin, we liked Gangfin when Gangfin was small and bought some product from us and supplied some product, but now I think you have to deal with the fact that there's some concern about Gangfin's too big. Just any comments about how when you become this large and this successful, how things change and relationships might change?
Yeah, maybe finish the first questions about the previous question about our strategy for diversified resource plan. Actually, when Gangfin becoming like the size of Yao Ming, and no one can give enough raw materials to Gangfin.So that's the strategy. That's the planned strategy. We need to become independent because we're much bigger than the 10 years ago or 15 years ago. So we decide to, but also we like to do step by step, and we like to develop more through organic growth, not just buying somebody else.So this is still our main strategies for the future, to
continue to grow organically.
We want to talk about the vision for Gangfin. Where is the future of Gangfin? But before we talk about the future,I'd like to hear both of your context on the present. Currently, the Western world likes to view China as one actor. And I wanted to get both of your reactions to, you know, how the world, how the people who don't spend time in China, who don't know China personally, should look at China. You know, what should we, you know, five things, or, you know, Reader's Digest, the short version of how to not be an idiot when talking about China. And then both of your personal experiences of how you've sort of seen China change over the last, you know, 10 years, especially when it comes to addressing climate change and, you know, green energy and sort of the sector we kind of fit in. So first, I'd love to just sort of like, what are the dumbest things you hear people say about China, and help our listeners, help me understand how I should be looking at China. What should I be paying attention to and looking at?
I think you should come to China more often.
No, but give me a little more. You know, it's a easy headline grab these days to say, oh, China.
I think everything, you look at everything, you should not just use black and white. It's a more colors. And even, for instance, same as if you look at how to look at China, it's more colors. So it's not just the black or white. I think China is developing from the old days, from the poor country, now becoming richer. So there's some people couldn't understand. Even some Chinese people don't understand ourselves. So I think this is the very interesting question, is how to look at China. I think you have to look at history. Look at where they came from. Then maybe you can understand more why China is today.
What do you see as the biggest misconceptions about China abroad?
I think maybe for the Western countries or Western peoples, some of them maybe just to look at too simply. I think you should look at more areas, more aspects, not only one side, because I don't want to talk the political things.
Yeah,
it's
sure,
not
sure.
Our
no,
business.
No, 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 right, no.
Exactly.
But I think China is growing, as a country is growing, is improving, is growing, as we're seeing in the last 40 years after China becoming open to the world. I think openness is very important. That makes China becoming today.
Both you and Mr. Li kind of represent symbols of how China's changed. I mean, you both come from, you know, the long history of starting in a humble place in the lithium industry. Now you're both very successful. So I'd like to know how Mr. Li thinks about it, because you have two different experiences when you've spent so much time traveling around the world in the last few months. And, you know, Mr. Li is a very smart guy. I think he understands more English than he lets on, but he has a different lens as somebody who's totally fluent in English. And I just like to get his thoughts on all this travel he's done. He's been exposed outside of China a lot lately. So how is he thinking about how Gangfen's perceived and how Chinese people are perceived from his window?
感受就是你这么多年也经常在国外中国以外这个出差，那你觉得外国人是怎么看干风，怎么看中国，就是从你的角度来看。这个话题呢不是很好回答，我觉得哈，就是干风给人家一个什么样的印象，是吧？我觉得赣锋应该是一个做实事的一个公司，应该就是说是努力在工作的一个公司，并不是虚的跟你吹吹牛，所以呢，我们还是脚踏实地的一个公司，但是怎么看中国，我觉得赣锋也是一个缩影，就是其实中国也是一个非常务实的一个国家，包括也是比较勤劳，也是努力的在。 所以这几年积累的财富也比较多，这个肯定跟这个也有一些关系。所以的话呢，我总是这么感觉啊，就是说，像赣锋这样的一个公司，能起的这些成绩，当然离不开我们团队的共同努力，对吧？首先呢，就是还是感觉这个，大家的 对我们呢也还是比较支持，所以呢我们也能在这个市场上能起得比较好的口碑啊，包括起得好的成绩啊，我就是这么简单一个看法。嗯，
Mr. Think this Ganfeng actually also is looks through Ganfeng's developments is similar like look at China. We're starting from very small humble place. Jewelry has been visited that place many years ago, and now growing bigger and bigger to like today. And China also similar. So it's the same progress as China. We think we like to have the impression from other outside the people outside China look at Ganfeng as Ganfeng should be a very practical company. We are hardworking people, hardworking team. So this is also probably the China should be looked at.
The last sort of, when we look at the vision for Ganfeng, I wanted to get Mr. Lee's thoughts on the solid state battery market, given your strength in the lithium chloride space. When do you think solid state batteries are going to really hit the market in a big way, and how does Ganfeng see its position in that market, or in the chloride market?
Chloride metal.
Yeah. Okay. Mamie 想问一下，我们在固态电池这一块，我们是未来是怎么规划或者怎么来看待这个事情？那对我们的氯化锂、金属锂这一块的对未来的需求，我们是怎么样一个看法？
氯化锂跟金属锂。
固态电池最终是要用到金属锂，那固态电池什么时候可以商业化？
固态电池是商业化的，我觉得这是一个很重要的一个方向，一定会实现这个方向，只是时间问题。有些人乐观一点，认为2022年，也有人悲观一点，可能问2025年甚至更后的时间。但是呢，我觉得哈。应该在2022年，应该会在全球会逐渐的来推广这个固态电池。固态电池的发展呢，对于赣锋来讲呢，肯定又是一个很重要的一个发展机遇。它呢带动这个金属锂的需求，而赣锋的金属锂呢，在全球目前呢是最大的一个供应商。未来呢，赣锋呢在这个市场上呢，我们还会始终坚持这块阵地。我们呢，在这个基础上呢，我们还会加大研发力度来研发一些锂粉呐、包括超薄锂带呀这一块的，我们会逐渐的加强这个技术力量。我们这次呢，年终回去还要开会来研究这些方面的东西，这主要的就是要加快对于这个固态电池这一块的应用的一些领域的开发。这个市场是可期的，未来呢可能会像碳酸锂一样的，有一个爆发式的增长。甚至呢，这个上达到上万吨的这个需求，我们都可以预见到的，是吧？这种。
Yeah, we believe the solid state battery will be the future of the lithium batteries. So we are quite confident they will be commercialized, just a matter of time. So some people have a more aggressive view as early as 2022. Some people think maybe 2025 or even later. But even from our point of view,solid state in the end will create demands for more lithium metal, which we are Ganfeng's already number one producer of lithium metal globally. So we think we have very good opportunity to develop the technology for solid state. We are also going to develop more products, which will be used for solid state battery technologies in the future.
Joe, it looks like you've got a buddy over there.
Yeah, I have brought in a Lao Panyo, a Shin Lao Panyo of Ganfeng, Mr. Tom Hodgkins, the chairman of LAC, who was part of the celebration that you're here in Argentina for at Minera XR. So I just thought I would get Tom to say a few words about how he feels about the relationship with Ganfeng.
Joe, it's really special. We've known Ganfeng directly for a couple of years. We were introduced by one of the esteemed leaders in the industry. And we found out very quickly that this is really a unique company. This is a company that's visionary, entrepreneurial, and total integrity. We had a couple of meetings face-to-face. We came to an agreement on a deal, shook hands, and nothing changed after that. The lawyers got involved. Paperwork always takes time. But when you're dealing with people whose word is their bond, man, you can build a great partnership.
It could, thanks for that, Tom. Could we hear Gangfen's kind of...
So what do you think about this guy over here?
Yeah.
What do you think about Tom
Shaoxian? What do you think about
Shaoxian?
Those black guys and getting Mr. Lee's Jun De Qing Quan?
他说我们怎么看美洲里业的这些伙伴们 像Tom, John,
我们怎么看Franco，Franco，是，我觉得从我的角度看啊，美洲里业这个公司也是个非常不错的公司，目前它的资源状况呢也非常好，而且呢这个公司呢，也有这种开拓精神，尤其是现在在这个起步阶段。 他还是能持之以恒的把这个卤水开发往前推进，包括这个粘土这个项目啊，都在不断的在推进。我觉得只要你务实的、踏踏实实去干的话，这样的公司是一定会有前途的。所以我也相信美洲里业一定会有一个很好的一个明天。
Yeah, we also feel the team of Lithium America is very practical, and they were focused on the target with the for many years and bring this project in real, and also the Nevada project as well. So we believe the company like this and team like this should have been as successful.
Could we get yours and Mr. Lee's thoughts? And we're in Argentina, but I'd like to talk a little bit about clay, or as we call it, soft rock.
Soft rock.
What Mr. Lee thinks about the development of the clay asset in Nevada in particular and in just in general.
就问我们怎么看粘土的项目，或者是具体想这个内华达这个项目。粘土这个项目呢，我们觉得哈，开始我对这个项目呢，不太感兴趣。 后来我发现通过这个做试验，发现这个收益还是很高的，所以呢，我们就引起了高度重视，也投入了一些精力来做这一块。我觉得这个项目还是非常有潜力，可能对于这个以后矿石提锂是一个很好的一个补充，矿石提锂如果这个项目上去以后，矿石提锂可能就会受到一些影响，甚至发展的步伐会因此放缓。 所以呢，我就刚才讲到前面讲的那个美洲锂业的这个，现在它包括磊磊这些人才也引进来了，也建立了一个很好的团队，所以呢，他们对这块美洲锂业对这个粘土的开发这块，肯定也以后也会有一个很好的一个发展前途啊。Yeah, actually, in the beginning, we were skeptical about the clay.
So was Joe.
Yeah.
Woyang的.
but we were open to that. So we started a couple of years ago to do some tests. And after the testings, we found very interesting. We got very good results for the clay. So we think this clay can be commercialized. So we think this clay should have a good potentials in the future. So could be a good complementary to the spodumene.
Okay, well, you know, this has been a unique opportunity. We really want to thank both of you guys for doing this, for coming to the podcast. And this is the first time we've had a bilingual podcast, so 谢谢你. But we end the podcast with a section, and I'm not sure if this section is going to translate, but I'm going to try. So we have what we call rapid-fire questions. We're just going to ask one, and it has nothing to do with lithium necessarily, but if you and Mr. Lee, knowing what you know now, could make a phone call to yourself on the day you graduated from college, what advice would you give yourself?
Very good question. 这个 question 就是说，如果现在，假设现在你要给你大学刚毕业的时候，那个时候打一个电话，你会跟那个时候的你说什么？
就是我刚毕业的时候。
对，假设现在了，然后你现在要回到多少年以前，你大学刚毕业的时候，你现在要给你大学刚毕业时的时候的你打一个电话，那你会给那个时候的你说什么？
这个问题
OK, 等一下等一下 You answer first then Lishan can answer.
I think if I call myself to right after graduation from university, I would tell myself I should spend more time on what we're doing, to learn more what we're doing.
So more study.
More study.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Now, Mr. Li, Yifeng, you're Shangfa. Trigger one T. So, Shema.
我的回答是说，我如果我现在给我那个时候打电话，那个时候的我打电话，我会说要多学点东西。你对你现在所做的事情，你要去多学，多去了解，做更多的功课。
这个反正是虚拟的一个假设嘛，是吧？是，我觉得哈，我觉得就是说，可能会这样说。那么其实，理行业也是一个很有发展前景的一个行业。我们可能在这个行业里面的努力，也是可以实现一个很大的一个目标的啊。
He probably would tell the young guy at that time, "This lithium industry has a big potential."
Buy more shares. All right, so, you know, this has, you know, we really had a lot more things we'd like to talk about, but we have limited time on the podcast. So Emily and I are going to ask you guys if we can do this again in China later in the year, because we'd really like to talk more deeply and bring the Gangfen story to more people.
还想在年底之前在中国再做一期节目
啊，
可以吗？
你这个非常有深度，其实你这些提问呢、啊，都对我是一个很好的一个触动，是不是
？You have asked many good questions, also good for ourselves.、
Yeah. I have a question. If we're going to do this in China, what's the one phrase in Chinese I need to learn before that podcast?
That's very important. you should know how to speak that. That's when I'm in Argentina, first thing I have to learn is where's the
Don't
venue?
Style
venue. The venue.
Okay, other than going to the toilet, what would be one good expression Emily should learn?
It's a difficult question for me.
Okay, all right. So we'll wait until we're in China and you can tell us then.
Yeah, that's time. That time we'll tell you.
Okay, so we just want to 非常高兴，谢谢你。Thank you very much for being with us and taking the time. We know, you know, an hour and a few minutes ago you were the president of Argentina and now you're stuck here with us. So it's been very kind of you to spend time with us.
So thank you. This has been another episode of the Global Lithium Podcast recorded in Buenos Aires, Argentina. And we've been with the leadership of Ganfeng Lithium, Li Lanbing and Wang Xiaoshen. Thank you both very much for joining myself and Joe Lowry today.
And thank you for our special cameo appearance guest, Tom Hodgson. From the chairman of Lithium Americas.
And Joe, if our guests want more of the Global Lithium Podcast, where do they have to surf the web to make that a reality?
Well, I'd tell them to go to the Gangfen Lithium website, but if they don't want to do that, then they can go to @globallithium on Twitter, or they can find me on LinkedIn, and they can find you.
I'm @lithiumpodcast. I'm Emily Hirsch on LinkedIn, and we are at www.lithiumpodcast.com. The Global Lithium Podcast is on iTunes, other apps, Spotify. YouTube.
So,
basically anywhere.
As we normally close the Lithium Podcast with, good night and good luck.
Thank you.
谢谢。
谢谢。
This has been the Global Lithium Podcast with co-hosts Joe Lowry and Emily Hirsch. The podcast is edited by Elena Peach and produced by Joe, Emily, and Elena. You can find more episodes of the podcast at lithiumpodcast.com, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you have a question for Joe or Emily, or a suggestion for a future episode topic, please send an email to globallithiumpodcast@gmail.com.